say that it can never be done, but the question is, you know, how much is really for the kid and how much is for the parents? And a lot of kids at that age don't even have the appreciation. They may have the halacha of a gadol, but doesn't mean that the kid can fully appreciate what it means to be in Eretz Yisrael just because he's 13 years old. I think it's a fad like many other fads. And be'etzem, it's not chatchila, but there are probably chatimses where people have good reason to do it, so it would depend on the situation. But it's say that, you know, leaving yeshiva and bar mitzvahs in general, I have heard from many, many 7th and 8th grade rabbeim that kids suffer because of the overemphasis on bar mitzvahs that are placed on children, that they suffer because they're too busy with Eleni and too busy with getting ready for the bar mitzvah, so they don't concentrate as much on their learning. So, you know, the bar mitzvahs have been hyped up too much, I think. In general, that's even true if you don't go to Eretz Yisrael. You know, if you talk to people in Europe, they, you know, had a piece of kichel and they moved on, that was it. They didn't make big things about it. Hagam, the Mashal does say that Ein lecha sudas mitzvah gedola mizu, so you know, there's a strong argument to make bay b'yoms, but ask anybody from 50 years ago if there was any bay b'yoms, nobody had bay b'yoms. It didn't happen. But I think that's probably a good thing because sefer kosef, that's a special sudas mitzvah. But that in general, the bar mitzvahs are overhyped, right? It's probably true. Just yesterday, a person called me that the kid went through two accidents and they were making a sudas hadar, and they wanted to know what, you know, to make a big kiddush and shul, etc. And I told them, you know, everything today is like, as more public it is, the more money you spend, that's how people measure something. I said, why don't you make a small sudas hadar on the house? Whatever other money you would use to make a fancy suitor or a kiddush and shul, give that for tzedakah or for achzakas Torah, and it'll be a bigger schus for your kid than having a big oilam at a kiddush and spending a lot of money. Not because the people didn't have the money to spend, but just to give them a value that they're showing the kid. Yes, we have to give haidah, we're going to have your rabbeim there and some close mishpacha and a small thing. And the size of the affair doesn't show the chashivas of the event. That's only a false measuring stick that people use today. But if I cared, if they would say, and we're taking all the extra money and shtitzing Torah or helping an arm of mishpacha, that would be a far greater schus for the child. And so make a small suit of sit down and finish, but I don't have to make everything, doesn't have to be so public and fancy and extreme. That's how I find it today. I think and the people are makabel to do it, which I thought was good.
Ask a follow up to this question, which is asked by Balabatim, but also Balabatim or Klei Kodesh. When kids have a sitter party or a chumash party, so usually it's in the middle of a day. So Baal Batim will ask in terms of weighing how important it is that they take off work, which can be very complex for many people. And even sometimes Rebbeim will ask me if they're a Rebbe in a day school, that, you know, if they one Rebbe tells me that if he takes off for his kid's sitter party or chumash party, on the one hand, as a substitute, the whole day is lost for his talmidim, you know, for his elementary school talmidim. On the other hand, he kind of feels like, you know, he's not giving his kid the sense that he's there for his seminal events in life. What's your take on what parents, fathers, should be advised regarding those events?
Especially when the kids are that young, mind the tea is you got to be there, because if everybody else is, the kids aren't big enough to understand that the parent is giving a shear and therefore can't do it. So yeah, I think you have to try, because the kids are younger and it's hyped up and it's a very special thing for them. So you have to try to make it work. That's my feeling.
Done. If other fathers are gone.
Yeah, no, no, I'm talking, you know, I'm talking about only if fathers are going. I mean, I see sitter parties today, my grandchildren, the grandparents come, right? You know, from out of town, right? The grandparents come from out of town.
Baltimore's raising the bar.
I mean, so some families do that, you know, it depends on the...
So if it's a, let's say, assume a 50-50 ratio, fathers will come and don't come. His kid won't be the only kid.
50-50. Right. So then it may depend on the nature of the kid also. If the kid is a more sensitive kid, then the father's coming is more important. If the kid's less sensitive and really, really is less sensitive, then if the kid can understand that his father is being rather stare then and it's hard, you know, then it could be something else. But Bederichlal, I think, have to err on the side of... making sure the kids feel that we have time for them. You know, my wife always tells me, and it's a good thing for every Rebbe to remember, that v'limadtem es b'neichem elo tamidim also means children. It doesn't just mean tamidim, right? And especially people who are busy in the klal, it's very easy to lose sight of, you know, that's the job of a wife to make sure that the husbands don't do that. And we have a tendency of doing that because of busy schedules, etc. And I don't know, I think these things are important. Siddur parties are important, yeah. And Haskalah Gemara is important, you know, those are important things to try to come. Two-year-old is not important. You know, sitter parties are later than that. Two-year-old is not important.
No, they have graduation. They have your nursery graduation.
It's not the same thing like getting a sitter or getting a chumash or starting Gemara. You know, it's different. It's different, but you know. But it also depends on the parents' yachas of the kid also, right? I find in general, I have seen a tendency of poor parents that have made fancy bar mitzvahs and weddings for their kids and put themselves into hock because of the guilt they felt for not giving their kids the attention that they needed and wanted to be yaitzeh with that, and therefore they, you know, falsely, you know, put money into these simchas way beyond their means, which is, you know, it's not to die. You know, if the kids don't feel that the parents care, then making a big wedding or a big bar mitzvah doesn't, I don't think makes such a big ratio with the kid. Not only that, the kids perceive it many times correctly as the parents are doing for themselves, more for the kid, and it doesn't have the right ration. Like somebody asked me recently, you know, it was a first time parent marrying off their first child, and they asked me, what do you tell your kid before the chasna as a, you know, as an inspiration? I looked in the eye and I said, nothing. So he looked at me and he said, nothing? I said, listen, if you raised your kid well and paid attention to him and cared about him all the years, you don't have to talk to him. And if you didn't take care of your kid all the years, then the drush you're going to give him then is not going to make a difference anyhow. So, you know, to say that that's going to make the difference, what you say right then, doesn't mean that there's never a time you can tell a kid anything, but I'm saying, but, yeah, you know, don't make events bigger than the day-to-day experience of life, and kids seeing, you know, what's important, that carries much more weight than events. But today, where it's an event-driven world, you look in the Jewish papers, you see everything is events, right? But it's the day-to-day yachas with the kids that make a bigger difference, I think. Kid deserves a nice chasna too, and a nice bar mitzvah too, but that's not what's gonna make the kesher with the parents. It's the kid seeing the Abba that makes the kesher. More than the big simchas. You know, but obviously, in every community, there's pressures, what everybody else does. You know, it's not easy just to, you know, to do it small. But then this person came from the one who had made a suicide doll came from a wealthy community. And I said, and if your kid really understands that you're really putting more money in as to give to tzedakah as a result, and you're in it together, and you know, and the kid knows that you're doing it for that reason, you're teaching him something, you're giving him a great value, more than that you had five types of herring and yabchik and cholent at a kiddush and Shabbos and shul. Yeah.
So, in dealing with the financial strains of being a firm ben Torah in America today, I think a lot of ben Torah are working find that they're really, really overwhelmed with work. And I'm wondering if there's some general principles that we should be thinking about in terms of how much is too much in terms of ishtadlus when we have heavy tuition burdens, a lot of children trying to learn everything. Just again, it's an individualized question, but general principles we should be thinking about in terms of the ishtadlus we should be doing, how much is too much to meet our financial obligations?
You know, there was a sifa here in town many years ago with a bunch of rabbanim, and a parent got up and asked one of the chashverov in town, you know, if I take a second job, then I can pay full tuition, and if I learn at night, I can't pay full tuition. What should I do? To me, the question was absolutely ridiculous. How can you answer such a question? Reuven should take a second job. Shimon should not take a second job. All these things are so miyuchad to each situation that you can't answer such a question and a rabbim and tell the person, yes, you should get a tuition break. No, you shouldn't get a tuition break. How important is this person's learning? What is his matzav, etc., etc.? And what you're saying is the same thing. In other words, today, parents that are Baruch Hashem making a nice living, right? You know, can't make ends meet with the tuitions that there are and the simchas they have to make and the chasas. I'm not talking about Kli Kodesh. I'm talking about good balabatim. They can't do it. It's Baruch Hashem, you know, merubim, yiladim, people have big mishpachas and people are stretched, and these are great issues that face the klal, right? Certainly if simchas can be toned down somewhat, it makes a difference. But a lot has to do with what lifestyle the parents live, the community they're in, how the kids are going to take it, right? And a most important factor is always that the kids have to see the parents as a team. It can't be that one parent insists on one way and the other one does the other way. If it's not a team, the kids feel it, and it makes a difference. And then whatever you end up doing won't be good anyhow, right? But that's why everybody needs a rav to figure out in their own situation, given their matziv, what's a proper hishtadlus and what's an improper hishtadlus, you know, how much is because this is what everybody else does, and how much is that it's really expected, you know. When they say, you know, like when kids come back from school and say, everybody has this phone, right? So that means it could be two kids have it, and it's called everybody. That's how people talk. The same thing goes, you know, with everybody makes such a simcha. Does everybody make such a simcha, right? Do we have to not make such a simcha? It's, you know, you have to know the metzias, but when the kid feels that the parents are a team and that and they're trying their best for them and they give to them, so it's still, these are hard things. They're not simple things, and there's great pressure in the from society today. My father used to say that Yidden were better at living in poverty than living in wealth. And I believe that's probably the pshat in the Gemara of Yofa and the Yusil Yisrael. Wealth is a big problem, right? And not having it today is also a big problem, because, you know, people are expected to do so much with their kids. But if you make a cheshbon, you will find that there are people who are not after claycaters, but could be claycaters, it could be low wage earners, but people who live more simply and happily can end up many times having their children learning longer than people that held out for big money shidduchim, and the kids didn't end up learning as much, even though there was more wealth in one of the sides, perhaps, you know, in terms of doing the shidduch. But what works more is how simple people are, how less needy people are, and how balanced people are. If people are balanced and they work out, they'll see what they can do, and they get tata d'shmaya. But it's impossible to answer and say, you know, you got to do this much, etc. Every community is different, and every family situation is different, and it has to do sometimes with the shul they're in and the sviva they're in, you know. But it doesn't mean you have to kowtow to everything, but at the same time, you have to be responsible. That he's working too hard?
No, the part was what your yikes in terms of Chiyuv Hishtalus. Was that part of it? I thought that was part of the question.
It is now.
Yeah.
In other words, how does it factor in, besides the elements that are being stated, but how does he has to make that balance? Is he being yikes in Hishtalus with his 9-to-5 job that he can say he's yikes in his Hishtalus?
Well, 8 to 9, maybe.
Yeah.
8 to 9. Well, because his primary job is yikes in Chiyuv Hishtalus. Can he take that type of
If the time that he's, if he makes a normal hishtadlus, and the other time he's using to do homework with kids, to learn with kids, to be involved in chesed, right? Then it's a good cheshbon, right? If it's because he likes to have more relaxation time and less pressure. Not that everybody needs a certain amount of relaxation too, but if it's yeser min amida, then he should be making more shtadlus. It depends on the person, right? But it also depends how high maintenance the family is, and that's something which, you know, if a bacher is in shidduchim, we can tell him to try to make sure that the girl is not high maintenance. But if a person is married and his wife is high maintenance, right? So then many times the shalom bias will dictate that you have no brayer. So, you know, you can't tell her, well, now that we're making simchas, you have to start becoming low maintenance. It doesn't happen. You don't change. So it's, those are things that, you know, people are in fixed situations where they have to deal with it accordingly. They have no bravery, right? So every situation is different. That's why these are such hard questions to answer. But the normal hishtadlus is correct as long as the person is using his day correctly, right? But when there's oodles and oodles of wasted time, you can't say that's normal hishtadlus. Maybe they should be doing more. When the person is busy learning, busy helping the klal, etc. They tell over a famous story with the Chavetz Chaim about a yid who was so busy helping out in the klal that it was hurting his business. And his wife had tinnitus, and he went to the Chavetz Chaim, and he was supposed to go into the Chavetz Chaim on Motzei Shabbos after Havdalah. That's when he accepted people. And during Shal Shudetz, Chavetz Chaim was teaching the pasuk Ach Tei V'Chesed Yerufuni Koyim Echaya. So the Chavetz Chaim stelled, Raidif is a shtak loshen. What's Yerufuni? So he said, people have many redifas in life. Davar Melech's bakasha was that his redifa in life should be Tei V'Chesed. That's to be right of him. And the man felt that he had an answer, and he didn't even go into the Chavetz Chaim. And I remember when Rashi Tzomrach told over this story, maybe this is the misnagdish of you, but this is what Rashi said. He said, it doesn't mean that the Chavetz Chaim knew that this Yid was coming to ask the Shaila. But he does believe that the Chofetz Chaim could have said it then, because he had the Sata Dishmaya, because of who he was, that he should say that word to answer this Yid's question. That's how the Reshiva put it. Right? I'm not sure that in other schools of thought they would say the same thing. They say he knew, etc., etc. But at the same time, when the Reshiva said over once from the Altum Slabodka that he believes that the Altum and Kelim was such an Ish Kaddish that it's possible that he had Ruach HaKaddish too. That's what the Altar told Rashiva about his Rebbe. He said he doesn't know if he did. He said, but it would not be a Chiddush to him if he had some level of Ruach HaKadosh, because he was such an Ish Kaddish. That's what he said. So even Misnagdim can talk about Ruach HaKadosh also sometimes. You know, but I guess you have to be, you know, holding or being Madrega to say such a thing. But that's what he said. He was a Zak Kaddish that could be. I think he even... And there's a letter that he even wrote about it where he merambas to this possibility. That's how much he was Masha was Rebbe.
The takeaway from Rebbe just said that a person has a regular, let's call it 9-to-5-ish job, a normal establishment in the United States of America. What would be, and that's only one part of it, what should be a person's goal, how many hours a day a person should have for a person who works?
That depends on the person.
Well, is there real? I mean, the Mishmur says, 3 or 4 hours a day. Yeah. Which is very hard. Everybody's experience says, what's a realistic? Everyone tries to learn as much as they can. What's a realistic goal for someone who's not in yeshiva and working a regular job?
I don't know the answer to that question. Maybe there's bigger people than me that can answer. I don't know the answer to that question because I just see different people with different types of pressures and these kind of questions. I almost feel, I don't mean to sound like it sounds cute to say this, but I almost feel like if you figured it out, you're doing something wrong. You know, in other words, like you should always be struggling with this type of issue to figure out how much I really could do more and what's, and every person's matzav is different. I don't know that it's easy. I mean, there is something about, besides kviyasin and learning, there are people who drive home and can listen to a shiur, and there are people that listen to the radio instead. In other words, there are things that people can do even besides that can make enough community. At the same time, if a person needs to hear something just to air out a little bit, that's shaykh too. I don't think it's possible to say. I think that a person has to be mevakesh from the Rabbanu Shel Olam, right, to have has such a geshmak in learning that he will make more time for them. That's what Bishol used to say. If a person has 15 minutes a day to either learn or to learn Musar or to learn Torah, he should do the Musar because then he'll find out he has more time. The Netziv used to say that a masmid makes time for everything. So the goal is to become a masmid, and then you make more time. But that, it's something that, I struggle with enough myself that I'm not, it's hard for me to say if there's a base time, If it's important, then you make more time. Right? And I think a big, big thing that can help people is to pick things that you enjoy to learn, right? There's only a handful of Gedolim that wrote in Kol Torah Kula, right? But most, even Gedolim, they had their sugyas, had their mesechtas, they had their mitzvahs, right? So if a person picks mesechtas, sugyas, inyanim that he has a geshmak in, then that's going to help him find more time to learn. I don't say that I know there's Daf Yomis and Amud Yomis and Daf Shavuos and all kinds of different things and different things work for different people, which is good. And you want to learn different Mitzvos HaTorah, but if you pick things you have a geshmak in, unless a person is a big Mama Madrega, Rav Levikon told me he hasn't found a not Gishmak Daf and Shas yet. I have. I'm not, you know, I found some Natishmak Daffin. I was just learning yesterday the Gemara in Becheiros, and I found it very tedious, and I'm learning a little Becheiros on my own, and it was, I didn't find the Gishmak, you know, but I went through it, but I didn't find the Gishmak. So if a person has an attitude that every daf is Gishmak, that's Gevaldik, right? But, and so then you can not learn anything, but if not, I think pick things that you have a Gishmak in, and you'll make more time to learn because of the fact that you have an interest in that inyan or that sugya or that type of halacha or whatever it is. I think it's a good practical etzer of making more time. Finding, you know, don't be stuck on the system as much as what works for me. That's what I find. Right? And, you know, it's like if you're allowed to say in chachba bu'umas tamin, I even tell this to Bachram sometimes, you know, they say over from Mark Twain, you never let schooling interfere with your education. And there's a certain mile in that too. In other words, a Bachar has to learn with the Fisidre Yeshiva, but I tell Bachram, you know, if you have extra time, you know, learn what you have a Gishmak in. Whatever Mitzvah you like, learn, because that's going to push you to learn more. I think it's just a practical, simple Eitzah that, you know, just try to find things that you enjoy, that you're attracted to, so you'll be mimic more in that inyan, you'll chazer it better, right? And if you have, you know, and hopefully we can grow and find everything Gishmak, but, you know, until you're holding at that level, what you find the Gishmak in, right, that's what a person should do. That's going to help them learn more. That's going to make more time, Betz, because you not much like I find it interesting, right? No, you're allowed to have favorite mesechtas. There's nothing wrong with that, right? Being a madrega, okay, you know, you have to. I'm not saying a person shouldn't try to learn everything, but to make more time, find what you have in your shmaka. That's what I find.
I find it both in parenting and with chinuch. Sometimes parents are concerned dealing with their children or the talmidim to err on the side of caution in terms of pushing their kids or monitoring their kids, being involved with their kids out of concern that they might be too heavy-handed, too much, push the kid off the derech. How does one balance that concern with the notion that maybe for carrots, the kid needs that greater involvement and tickle, and for carrots, he'll rise to the occasion and maybe accomplish even more when that care and concern
It's fair to say that in the same family and people that have more than one kid can find this to be true, that what works for one kid doesn't work for another kid, and what works in one generation doesn't work in another generation. You have to constantly change and figure out what to do. I was reading in the Sri Day Eish that when he was a Bachar in Slabodka, he has a list of all the elder Bachrim that sat on the Mizrach Vant. And he has a list of the Talmidim that were there. Rav Naftali Trupp was one of them. My Zeder of Shechtel Kramer was one of them. So I once asked Rav Shiva, who was in the next Kufa in Slabodka, I asked Rav Shiva, who did Rav Shiva sit with on the Mizrach Vant? Because I knew he was a Chashur Bachrim in Slabodka. So he said, Kemal Shizasna after Mizrachvant. So I said, Rav Shiva Shver sat in the Mizrachvant. He says, in the Shver's Tkufa, that's how the altar was Noig. In my Tkufa, no Bochum sat in the Mizrachvant. The altar kept on switching how he dealt with each generation, and because every generation needed a different Hanhaga. And that's true with kids too. I heard once Reb Henoch Leibowitz Hanbrach said that Reb Yankov Kamenetsky was miyuchad and that he lived through seven different kufas and he knew how to pass su to each one. So I thought it was a gewaldige Schwach. And every kid is different. You know, of course the kids have to feel this consistency, but at the same time, what works for one kid doesn't work for another kid. And what works for some of my kids who 30 years ago doesn't work for my kids today, right? So it's a fluid thing. You can't. Somebody once said, and I think there is a certain truth to this, that avada parents have to have a gewaltig amount of people with their kids, but somebody once said that a little bit of Hetzach Hadas is good too, just a little bit. Sometimes when we're too intense, we make it, you know, not good either. But to say that there's one mahalach, you know, of how one kid needs more, one kid needs less. You know, I have a lot of kids, so if I know some of my kids that if they don't call me Erev Shabbos, I know that I will try to call them even if they don't call me. Because I'll know that that particular kid, it can be married, could use that phone call more than another kid, right? And then the other one, if I didn't get to them or they didn't call me, okay. But, you know, but you have to cheshbon each situation according to what it is, and nobody bats a thousand. Everybody makes mistakes. It's only a question of that we have to try to do the best we can, but it's so complex, that's why you need gewaltig Satir Shmai. A Mashulach was in by me this week and told me over that he heard Rabbi Aaron Leib say over the following. He said, two 18-year-olds in Yerushalayim get married, Rabbi Nei Brock, says, and that's the minig. Says, Sir Baron Leib said, they're 18 years old, and that's when they get married. The Chazish held that way too. That's their hanoga. Says, they still need people themselves. So how can they raise kids if they're so young? Sir Baron Leib said, the one thing that they have, even if they don't have as much experience as somebody older, is the Eberster gave, built into them an ava for their kids. And if they give the Ava, then they'll have Satir Dishmaya, Mitzvah Shem, even if they don't have them as much understanding. So, you know, we need so much Seichel and so much Hadracha for each and every kid. It's such a special Satir Dishmaya. So, you know, but the Ava, that's going to come pouring out, right? And the more we do that, and then Midavin, then Mitzvah Shem, we'll have Satir Dishmaya. 3:30, I'm free, right? Is that right? Is there something else going on? But I'm happy to stay and happy to leave. Either way, it's good by me.
Can I ask a question? This question that may be pertinent upon the particular situation also, but I think we can all benefit from it, so that's why I'd like to ask. Suppose a person is confronted with a situation, for example, if, let's say, either a Talmud or a child or family member or even an acquaintance comes along and says,
they don't want to be from anymore. What's the best way to approach a situation like that? Each case is different. It's not, you know, there's always some reason why that happens. There's always a reason. And the question is finding out what the reason is, right? If the kid doesn't want to be frum, then something went wrong, whether it was with the parenting, whether it was with a friend, whether it was something happened to the kid, right? Normally speaking, if a kid wants to give up Yiddishkeit, there's a reason. And it's a, there was recently, I think about a month ago, there was a convention in Connecticut of over 600 parents with kids off the derech. Over 600 parents from all walks of life. From all walks of life, from modern, Hasidish, Yeshivish, any type you want, from everything. Over 600 sets of 600 parents that are going through such a thing. They were still healthy, you know, and the parents got together and they got chizik from people, and you know, and there's no one quick answer to, you know, these are you know, great shilas of the Zman, that people need great Satir Shmaya.